The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had been talking about centipedes, organisms that most folks are not eager to make acquaintance with, although in some respects at least they have an undeserved evil reputation. They feed on insects, so that they are helping keep the insect population down of necessity. This is not a reason to decide that you're going to cultivate a culture of centipedes in your home, but at least some of them are not venomous and are helpful in that respect. Now, we have one other major group of organisms in the subphylum Uniramia. We've talked about the etymology of the term before. I won't labor that further. But these are a category of organisms, one of the two major divisions of the arthropods. And we talked about the Onychophora. We've talked about the centipedes. We want to talk now about the millipedes. There are five other classes, four of which we're going to ignore and one of which we're going to spend some time on. The last one is the insects, and for reasons I have alluded to previously, and we will talk about at some length, they are a very, very important group of organisms. Some of you, I would assume all of you have some acquaintance with insects, good or bad. So when the time comes, we'll talk about those. I want to talk now about the millipedes a little bit, and then we'll make some summary comments about all of the arthropods down to insects, and then we'll begin a series of programs dealing specifically with the insects. The milli part of the millipede means literally thousand, so that the centipedes supposedly have 100 feet. We've talked about the fact that most of them do not. A few may. Some may have a few more than that. And the millipedes would say 1,000. I don't know how many legs millipedes have, but it I'm sure is not 1,000. If you watch a centipede walk, it sort of wriggles along. If you watch a millipede, it's very smooth. Now, the millipede, one of the class name for this is Diplopida, Diplo, P-O-D-A, Diplo, meaning double or two. And in the adult, the millipedes have two pair of walking appendages per body segment. Now, I fuss with my invertebrate Joe students regularly. We talked, when we first started talking about arthropods, that generally one of the characteristics is that there is one pair of appendages, walking appendage or motile appendages per body segment. Here you have the millipedes that appear to have two pairs per segment. In the adult, that is the case. But if you would go back to the embryology, the developmental stages of millipedes, you would discover that they have one pair of appendages per body segment. And in the process of development, you have a fusion of sections, somites, metamers, so that in the adult, there are two pairs of legs for each of the at least apparent somites. Again, the head end, tail end, there are some that don't have, they have only a single pair and so on, and that need not concern us. But it's a common, by virtue of the name and by virtue of what you see when you see one walking along, you would assume there are two pairs per segment. And there are in the adults, but not in the development. Now, that little detail, in my opinion, is of some importance in light of some of the evolutionist arguments about them. But I don't know that that need concern us especially. Now, the millipedes, again, I would expect that, again, the women amongst us, anything that's small and wiggles, they really don't care for particularly. As it turns out, the millipedes primarily feed on decayed plant material. So they are vegetarians. Some of them will feed on live plants, living plants, although that would be an exception rather than the rule. And even where they do that, there either are not enough of them or they do not feed on living plants enough to be of any source of concern about that. If you have a garden or a greenhouse, for reasons I'm not sure we want to go into, it is possible to have oodles of millipedes in a very short, a very small area occasionally because of the way the eggs are laid. And if that's the case, then there may be some reason for you to take precautions to keep them off of a prized plant of some sort. But usually that simply is not a threat. Many of them are very drab looking, dark, brown, black occasionally. But on the other hand, there are some of them that are very brightly colored, brilliantly colored. I remember years ago when I was in graduate school, we were camping out at a camp in the upper part of South Carolina, and I was out doing part of my collecting, and we were out ripping the woods to shreds, hunting for things, and I had turned over a rotten log. And here was a very bright color, blue, red, yellow, long critter. To me, obviously, it was a millipede. And my two sons were with me. Joe, at that time, I think, was probably about seven or eight. And Jay was 4 or 5. And I suggested to Joe that he pick up the millipede. And he looked at me and looked at the millipede and came up with the predictable suggestion, let Mikey do it. And he prevailed on getting Jay to pick the thing up. And, of course, they're harmless. Often when they are disturbed, they have the habit of coiling themselves up into a coil. But this is simply a, I assume, a matter of an attempt at protection. But they are not, none of them have venom. It is true that many of them have a rather descriptive descriptive glands on their body that are known as repugnatorial glands. Repugnant, I assume, is a word that's familiar to you. But they do have the ability, some of them, to exude a very noxious chemical that is repugnant, and it is simply one of the defenses that they have. And not all of them do that, but if you handle some of them, you might discover afterward that you have some rather ill-smelling hands or fingers. No danger chemically, but it just is not something you want to smell often. They do have the capability in their reproduction of producing large numbers of eggs. And I can remember several occasions where we've been out either in the woods or someplace else and seen dozens of little tiny millipedes all in one place. Seems to me after they had one spring in the shrubbery that they had planted behind the science building, I went out one day and there were little tiny, inch or so, three-quarters inch long millipedes all over the place. But they, again, are not venomous. They are vegetarian, so they're not organisms that we have to worry about. The eyes, indeed, we didn't talk about centipede eyes, but the millipede eyes are a little different. They have two clumps of eyes, ocelli, and for that reason are a little bit different from centipedes. The bodies are usually 25 to 100 somites. So you figure a little less than two pairs of legs per apparent body segment. And the most legs that a millipede would have is probably around 200. So the name millipede is really a a good word. Not improper particularly, but it's a little bit deceptive name. It would lead you to think that they have 1,000 feet, and in fact they really don't have that many. Now, aside from the poropods and the symphyla and some of the other organisms that are interesting in themselves, at least to a zoologist, They are not generally considered to be important by virtue of the fact there are not many of them, and they are not venomous, they don't carry diseases, etc. So I'm aware of the fact that there are some other organisms in this category that we have not talked about. But we've talked about three classes to this point. Millipedes, the centipedes, the onychophora, and I think these are the three that would be most likely to be of interest in the group, with the exception of the insects. Now, what have we established at this point? Well, we've looked at a variety of organisms. If you think back over all of the kinds of organisms that we have been discussing, looking at in past programs, as varied a group of organisms as it's likely to come up with. We talked about trilobites, for example, that are supposedly extinct. We talked about horseshoe crabs and arachnids, the spiders, the scorpions, black widows, brown recluses, the orb web spinners, daddy long legs, the mites and ticks, the crustaceans, centipedes, millipedes. Now, if we had a display of all of these kinds of organisms in one place, I don't think anybody would leap to the conclusion that somehow there is a common ancestor for all of these organisms. By the way, if you pick up a zoology book, you will find usually discussions of the evolution of these organisms. But I found it very interesting that in the case of the centipedes and millipedes, there really isn't any, at least in the textbook we use, there is no discussion of the phylogeny, the evolution of these organisms, because it is apparent that there is nothing they can be connected to. But if you think over all the variety of these organisms, my question to the evolutionists would be, what would the common ancestor be? Now, whether you're trying to come up with one or many, and there are different problems for either of those two possibilities, the evolution is simply stymied. Now, as I have indicated several times, there are only two places of persuasive evidence to support evolution. That would be in nature or in the fossil record. And in neither of these places do we find any evidence at all to support the idea that there has been a common ancestor or ancestors for the arthropods that we have talked about to this point.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.